This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at SCARS VOIP. That's SCARSVOIP.com. Your net control for this session is actually Roger, W4RFJ. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely opening it up this evening. I'm located in the beautiful city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, southern Florida, where we have a temperature of 80 degrees right now. And I believe it was about 89 with some storms today. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and that's always a great thing. How about anyone celebrating their birthday, either last week or this upcoming week, so we can say happy, happy birthday? If so, we ask you to come aboard. Okay, no birthday stations. Once again, I'll repeat. That means we're getting no older. So this is the TIN Open Forum, the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now, I do want to advise you that if you've connected to this net this evening and you have participated, you will definitely be part of that recording, which we post on our website very shortly after the session has concluded. So, without any further ado, I want to tell everyone that our session tonight is about digital technobabble. We have some great experts in the background, and hopefully you'll ask them questions, and hopefully you'll participate. So with that, Roger, W4RFJ, I'm going to throw it your direction so you can begin the net this evening. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Over to W4RFJ.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Sunshine. It's always a treat to hear your melodious voice sounding off with the preamble before the net. That is, I'm very thankful for that. And as Miss Sunshine stated, this is the digital technobabble part of our TIN. We're trying a new format out in which, you know, we talk about some projects we got going on, discuss techno issues, and, you know, we talk about digital in itself. You know, it's a very wide encompassing subject. You have old technology, which I consider to be radio teletype, AMTOR, CYTOR, which I think I spelled that wrong on my outline. And, of course, most people will recognize CW or Morse code as a form of digital communications. Let me grab a nickel. And then we have the new digital stuff. And you'll find that PSK, which has been around for quite a bit, has basically morphed off into biphase and quadrature phase, and there's all kinds of different forms of PSK and minimum shift keying, and a lot of the stuff that we deals with codecs or decoding words. But as we move along in the digital world, we start talking about software. There's more of an emphasis on software or the operating systems. Some of the areas that I really enjoy and really get into as far as diving down into the nitty-gritty is the level one area that we talk about in the networking. Oh gosh, I can't even remember what that's called. But anyway, long story short, short story longer, A to D, D to A, and you guys are probably wondering, what the heck is that? Let me grab a nickel. I don't want to be getting that purple crystal award. Analog to digital conversion. Digital to analog. Something that I've been playing around a little bit with here lately is data stream multiplexing. That's taking several chunks of digital data and multiplexing it so that you're sending it on a single serial channel. So basically, in the world of interfacing and hardware, you're basically controlling the analog world with digital signals. So with all that in mind, I'd like to find out how many people we got out there that would like to talk about their projects and or share and mentor and or ask questions about any specific issues. I didn't receive any emails, so I'm hoping in this forum we can come up with some things to talk about. This is W4RFJ taking questions, the taking check-ins. Sorry, I'm getting distracted here. Getting check-ins. How many people would like to share or talk about their projects? Please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
Six, Victor.
Six, Victor, recognized. Is there any others? Okay, hearing none. Go ahead there, Captain. It's all yours.
Well, thanks, Raj. First of all, thanks for running the show tonight and talking about email nada on this end. So something's got the pipe frozen up there in Pennsylvania. We can worry about that at a different time, I guess, on your last email in our direction. And that goes for Kathy and myself. I'm very interested in hearing you technobabble here tonight on this subject. And one point I'd like to touch on or ask questions about, and it doesn't have to be at the top of the parade here at all, but I have been doing some research on trying to find myself a microphone equalizer and compression software that is applicable for VOIP type operation. And I'll tell you what, that's harder to do than one imagines. There's just a ream of equalization programs out there, but it's all for your speaker. It's all for the incoming stuff. Now, I have found one program that I haven't downloaded yet that the literature on it, when I read it, sounds like it's right down my alley. That's called an Equalizer APO, Alpha Papa Oscar software. It's got some good ratings to it. So I guess my question when you get to something like this, Roger, in your program is, I wonder why it's so heavy on one side of the ledger and not on the microphone side on the other. And I'm wondering if you happen to know where the software normally implants itself, connects to, enters into the sound card. You know, is that before the D to A converter? Is it after? Are they trying to equalize only the analog type things? I'd like to learn a little more about that. At any rate, when it fits, W4RFJ from KY6V.
KY6V, this is W4RFJ. And, you know, I remember you and I discussing this the other day, week or two ago, and I was intrigued. You know, there's been so many, what's the word I should use, advances in hardware. I mean, when it comes right down to it, I don't know if you agree with me or not, Gordon, but, you know, you got to have that interface.
We're done.
That, I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted by a bunch of noise here. The harmonics are definitely doing their job. Anyway, long story short, short story longer, you know, there's got to be that level one of the OSI model. You know, it's the hardware that's actually doing the work. And where the software comes to into play is where you're taking that analog to digital and digital to analog. That's done in software most of the time, but they do have hardware D to A, A to Ds. You know, it depends on how that circuit was designed. Let me grab a nickel here real quick. Okay, I hope I didn't time it out. So why so heavy on the speaker, not so much on the microphone? That is a very good question. And one of which the software programmers are going to probably have to answer. However, you know, even though you have all the controls for the output, the microphone, I think the only control I've ever seen is just a an amplitude control. So that's a great question, and hopefully we can get some people to come in here and join us and throw out their 2 cents worth. That's what it's all about. So with that, this is W4RFJ. And Gordon's got a pretty interesting question about software utilized to equalize or compress microphone input. Anybody else share any information or have any ideas that might help us coordinate and or get an idea of how we can proceed with this? Please call W4RFJ with the South Cars TIN. Well, Gordon, I guess we'll have to table that for a little bit until we get some participation here. One of the things I put down in my outline is talking about those parts, you know, those ICs or modules can be purchased that'll do some of these jobs that we're talking about. The analog to digital, the digital to analog, and a lot of this stuff, you know, I'm finding out there's a lot more resources online than what used to be maybe just a few years ago. DigiKey, Jamco, Mauser, believe it or not, Amazon has been phenomenal for helping me locate things that I normally wouldn't find but are very abundantly available. So with that, you know, I mentioned some names of some parts places. I'll say them again: DigiKey, Jamico, Mauser, and Amazon. Anybody else have any ideas? This is W4RFJ with the July TIN Digital Techno Babble. Please call W4RFJ with your suffix only, please.
Seven Ocean.
Okay, we have Seven Ocean. Go ahead, George. Jump on in, fill your call, and what you got on your end? I was going to call on you next, whether you liked it or not. Over.
Well, thank you, Chief Gordon, and again to everyone on the GIN net tonight. This is NO70, George, Nottingham, Maryland, 91 degrees Fahrenheit. And I'm sitting here, the weather just totally throwing me off. I'm sitting here hot and cold on the inside with chills, and I don't think I'm getting sick. I think it's just this strange weather. Well, regarding the audio, I do not have an answer for Gordon's question. I do have, I am working on a project that is in the same area, so I thought I would speak up since you asked. And yes, it's using the Raspberry Pi that Chief you have Elmer me into so much. Let me reset the link. What I'm trying to do with the Raspberry Pi is to have the Raspberry Pi be a background audio feed to some monitors, low to mid range expense monitors, nothing really fancy, but just something to have some noise going on to keep them falling asleep when the main studio speakers are otherwise occupied with other tasks. And the Raspberry Pi is documented as having pretty poor audio. It's a very square digital waveform. It has a lot of raspiness in it, according to the reports. I've not personally heard it yet, but it is definitely in need of some waveform shaping. Let me reset. So what I'm currently in the process of doing with the Raspberry Pi is trying to improve the audio quality through the Raspberry Pi by feeding that Raspberry Pi digital waveform through some audio shaping circuits. Now, if you think of audio shaping circuits as being somewhat akin to equalization, that's where I'm thinking that might be some similarity here to what Gordon was asking about, whether this will be an actual workable as an equalizer for a VoIP feed or not. Gosh, that's a part of what I'm trying to figure out for myself and understand. Maybe there is something out there about it. I haven't seen it yet in the research that I've done. However, I'm going to be very interested to see how well the Pi, using a couple of waveform shaping circuits, and filters, low-pass filters or whatever, might be able to work this out. It's still early in the process, in the investigation stage, but I think I've made some pretty good progress within the past couple of weeks, and maybe we'll have something to report next TIM. So that's my Raspberry Pi for tonight comment on equalization. Wish I had a better answer for Gordon's question, but it is what it is, and I guess I'm going to have to stick to my story. W4RFJ in 070, back to you.
Okay, Gordon. Fine. Or, Gordon, listen to me. George. Sorry about that, George. I called you Gordon, and you caught me raiding the icebox. It's getting a little warm in here, and was trying to get something to drink. So, but you brought up some interesting points. You're right. The Raspberry Pi is not quite well known for its audio. It is very squarish, which means there's a lot of distortion, and it's not, as you eloquently put it, sinusoidal. So how do we get around that? Well, best practices for me is to utilize a USB sound card. And the ones that we use for All-Star actually have a 12-bit A to D, D to A, and work in full duplex. So that's the one way I would get around it, rather than trying to, unless you're into the experimentation side and filtering and or processing that speaker audio. Also keep in mind, the Raspberry Pi does not have a microphone input. So if you're looking for a microphone input, that has to be done with an external interface. So, anybody else want to join the conversation, please call W4RFJ with the South Cars TIN Digital Techno Babble.
Yeah, Six Victor with a comment for George.
Go for it, Captain.
Yeah, very interesting. KY6V here. George, you may want to take a look at this program that I'm planning on downloading, and if I get to it, it'll probably start tomorrow. Again, it's called Equalizer APO, Alpha Papa Oscar. I think that stands for Audio Processing Object. But at any rate, the material that I've read on this, this is a powerful piece of software. It's got beaucoup sliders for equalization and compression and all of that, but it has a whole filter pack in there, too. high pass, low pass, this, that, and the other. I mean, you could make mush out of a square wave. So you ought to take a look at that before you go too far, and it might help you out. Go ahead, Roger, KY6V, over.
Any comment, George?
I appreciate the lead. I will certainly take a look at that. It may save a lot of time and effort. What I did find, and this is more on the experimentation side. One of the major vendors, the one that's located in New York, has on their website, learning website, a project especially for the Pi Zero Wireless, where they used four resistors, two capacitors, and they relied on the inductance of the speakers or the headset. And they had a library of Python program that they were using to feed that. So that's where I was going until I just learned what I did from Gordon. I'm definitely going to be checking that out. So it's interesting about the number of options. And I guess, you know, I haven't heard the Raspberry Pi either way. You know, I have not yet. I tried hooking up a speaker to it as is through a card, but it just it did not work. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I will definitely be checking that out. And I think I still am going to continue with that tutorial project from that website that only required the resistors and capacitors, followed by a plug feeding the speakers, just to see what the very native sound sounds like. So I guess for right now, that with this information I've learned in the TIN tonight, that's going to be the plan. And Chief, I did put in the text box when you called me Gordon. I had to put in there, poor Gordon. I mean, he's, you know, to afflict him with that, poor guy, what can I say? W4FJ, NO70.
Well, Sheriff, beat me like a red-headed stepchild. I guess I'll have to just take it. Well, I think both of you brought up some very interesting points. As far as, like, getting parts and stuff, I know, George, you set on a mission to gather some pieces together to support the Raspberry Pi Zero projects that you've been working on. Did you, by any chance, have any feedback for anybody on that? Some suggestions as to who, what, where, why, when, and how to get parts, or, you know, some of the documentation that you've researched? NO70, this is W4RFJ with the TIN.
W4FJ and the TIN NO70. Oh my goodness, yes, do I have some tips for everyone there. First of all, it's going to be hard to do this without mentioning brand names and company names, so I want to be careful. But their website that I do recommend is retailmenot.com, which has a $5 discount on every $35 purchase made at a major corner, urban street corner computer supply store. And you can print that out or text it to your phone and have a $5 discount. There is a sale apparently in early July by the same company that had the tutorial I'm talking about, and we can post that on the, I presume, with Gordon's permission, on the, and some additional information on the website, for a link or something. I'm not sure how that would work, but anyway, they have a Makers Fair, virtual Makers Fair, with about a 10% discount in early July, and I anticipate that it may occur again next year. Let me reset the link. Also, there is another vendor beginning with the letter P based in the UK that just recently had some sales, like unresistor packs, things of that type. And also the big A, there are sales, and you can set alerts for your particular product that you want to see, and it will alert you as to when the price changes. Now, there's also a third-party website that will graph the changes in price over time, and you can then look at that and look over the history and maybe time a purchase with, say, the previous year's sale that one would not have been aware of were it not for that graph of the ups and downs in the price on the component that you want. And I can definitely work up the documentation for each of these places. So there are a lot of ways to do it to save the money on the parts. Now, that's all based on the purchase side of it. Let me briefly address the economy side of before purchasing, you may not need to purchase stuff as much as you think. Let me reset the link. It may be that in your shack you already have the parts that you need to pretty well work with the Raspberry Pis. Now, you know, the $5 and $10 and $35 financial marks for each of the models right now are complete for the computer board itself, but there are the interfaces that have to be used to be able to effectively use it, especially the first time until you get a secure shell or VNC set up, which a VNC is a virtual terminal, is what that is, and secure shell is a virtual command prompt. Now, I would imagine that most ham shacks have some type of an HDMI monitor in them. I also imagine that most ham shacks have a keyboard and a mouse in them. So that will reduce expense right there. A USB port, having 5 to 7 ports, I think at least 7 for long term, is good. That may or may not be in your library, but if you are a business traveler, you almost assuredly have some type of mobile USB port, and that would eliminate the need for purchase of a port. The tricky one will be the on-the-go cable, which is a way of taking the USB signal from the Pi and converting it to an Ethernet signal to go to your router. And those can get to be a little bit expensive, which is where that $5 coupon comes in, where you might want to buy a couple of those if you're using the Pi Zero. But now if you're using the Pi Zero wireless, that cable would not be needed, and that $5 difference between a Pi Zero and a Pi Zero wireless is much less expensive than having to buy an on-the-go cable. The Pi Zero wireless was not released, though, until March of this year, and I kind of came in before that, so I had to wind up buying the OTG cable. Regarding the differences in the Pi Zero and the Pi Zero wireless, I have some comments for later in the net about that, and including, I believe you wanted Chief to mention something about imaging. Let me reset. And that leads into the other parts you will need, like SIM cards and USB memory sticks and so forth, which will be necessary. But I tell you what, it's really nice. Hard drives are really good, but they do have a limited life. USB sticks do too, with a lot of reading and writing to them, but they're quiet and energy efficient, and one can use a Raspberry Pi for a whole year for about $3 and change in utility costs. And if you look at the power consumption of a USB memory stick compared to a hard USB linked hard drive, there are a lot of advantages, including for emergency communications. You can have a whole setup that will last a lot longer in case of a commercial power failure, assuming that your internet is still good in some way, or that you have some type of hotspot on your cell phone or something. So later in the net, we can address the imaging and SIM card issues and the timing of some of the releases. I just saw yet another release of the Raspberry Pi image. So we probably want to get to that, but that's for later, I guess. So I hope I answered your question, Chief. That was a long answer. W4RFJ in 070, over.
Oh, did you pass it back to me? Okay, George. Yeah, that was a long answer, but yeah, now I'm trying to remember where I was going with all that. But that's okay. You were able to share some of the resources that you have for, and you know, we do want to talk about some of the imaging systems, because I know that's been part of your project. But I got to tell you, just to try to keep things moving along, we're about 35 minutes into the hour. There are quite a few websites that you can get tons of information out, and I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't passing over anybody. Now, we've been talking about Technobabble. We were discussing a question that Gordon had brought up about a microphone equalizer software and why so heavy on the speaker and not the mic itself. And that's something that we'll probably have to start emailing software developers and see if we can find some more or get some interest into the software engineers doing something with that. But then we were talking about getting parts and so forth. Is there anybody on the net here that would like to, you know, chime up and, you know, speak up and chime in? I certainly would appreciate you taking the time out to join us. This is W4RFJ with the Digital Technobabble TIN. Let's see if we can take some check-ins here, and this is W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
Well, if it's going to be quiet, 6 Victor with a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Gordon. Just, I guess we don't have as many people here as I was hoping would be.
Yeah, well, it's a little early. We'll see how it goes. I was interested in George's comments about the peripheral stuff that you have to get when you're getting involved with some of these new gadgets like Raspberry Pi. Also, I might add, K2HA brought up an interesting point of an article that he had been reading about the difference between a bone black, beagle bone black, and the Raspberry. And I read that article. I think that it was very well written. I think that the writer had a little bit more of a favor for the Raspberry bone black, or not Raspberry, but the bone black unit. But all in all, I think if you sat down and compared it, I'd like your comments on that too, Raj. What one board offers. You know, how many USB ports does it have? Wi-Fi, you know, blah blah blah. How do the CPUs compare? You're going to find that everything is sort of shakes out at the end, I believe. Let me buy a nickel here. I wanted to mention the peripherals. One thing that people need to be very careful of is the getting the right plug to plug into the right socket. If you're ordering any cables, because some of these HDMIs and some of the other things can get a little hairy. You know, is it a standard HDMI? Is it a mini? Or is it a mini-mini? And you order a cable and the thing won't fit. But on the go-to cable, early on, and my recollection tells me that I have figured out that a guy could really take a standard standard USB cable and modify that into a go-to cable pretty fast. Seemed to me that there were only two pins that were involved in flopping it from one side to the other, and those two pins just got shorted together. So, you know, thinky-thinky. Also, I have found that in a lot of cases, the miniature USB cables for your Androids that you can plug into your, let's say, your laptop, are go-tos anyway. So, you know, you just grab it from the Android and use it when you need it. What do you think of that, Roger? KY6V, over.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's just a matter of understanding the interface and what wires need to be where and so forth and so such. The on-the-go cable, OTG, is basically a cable that's designed to allow you to plug USB devices into the cell phone. So that comes in really handy when you want to when you only have one USB port, and it's the micro USB port that most cell phones use, so just like the one that's on the Raspberry Pi Zero. And you want to run more than just one USB peripheral, you can now plug a hub into the OTG cable, which interfaces that USB port to the Pi Zero. And I'm not sure what wires get swapped around. I know that that's, you know, basically what you described is what the OTG cable's doing. And it's so inexpensive to buy. It, to me, it's just, you know, it costs more to build it myself than it would to just go buy one. They're only a couple of dollars, few dollars. And you could probably get them cheaper on Amazon. I haven't looked them up lately. Let me grab a nickel. Okay. Well, actually, the buying the stuff exactly, Gordon, I'm glad you brought it up about, you know, making sure you're getting the right connectors, and that's probably the biggest issue with most of the projects going on with the Raspberry Pi. I can give you an example of one interface area that I didn't even think about until just now talking to you guys. And that is the 1/8-inch phono plug, which is a four-conductor. It's tip, ring, ring, sleeve. And if you plug a regular stereo 1/8-inch phono plug into that spot, you're going to get a lot of noise because actually one of your speaker outputs is actually being connected to ground. So you get a lot of noise in there. You know, knowing how to wire up an adapter so that you can plug in a stereo headset or a set of speakers, that's something that you have to be aware of too. So, you know, getting familiar with the device, and you mentioned the Beagle Bone. There's quite a few of them out there. They're all ARM processors. Some have a little bit more, others have a little bit less. But whichever it is, they're all portable to Linux, and that's where we're getting a lot of the development. Did I answer your question, Gordon? Over.
Yeah, I'm sorry for the delay. I wasn't right next to the equipment. I didn't expect you to be throwing it back to me, but I got everything. Yeah, I'm all fine on this end. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, I figured I probably made you drop out of your chair in boredom. Okay, well, let me get back to my my outline here. I had mentioned some websites. There's a couple that intrigued me. They both have quite a number of projects. One of them is www.hackster, that's H-A-C-K-S-T-E-R, .io/raspberry-pi/projects. They've got 967 projects in there for the Raspberry Pi. Now, I got to admit, a lot of them are repeats, a little bit of a fork off from the originals, but still a lot of information there. Do I need to repeat that, or can I send it in an email? Okay, well, I'll just keep going here. And the other one I found was DIY-projects/raspberry-pi-projects. Now, both of these websites that I just mentioned, they do have skill ratings in them, you know, for easy, intermediate. There's some really very neat projects that will probably answer some questions about interfacing especially. So I'm going to give it another try here and see if anybody wants to join us in this month's TIN, which is about digital technobabble. This is W4RFJ. I've so far only had two participants. Is there anybody that might be coming in from All Star or from some of the other eavesdropping modes that we don't know about? Jump on in and let us know you're there, and we'll bring you in on the QSO. This is W4RFJ.
Seven Ocean, I have some additional comments regarding Spence and Gordon's mentioning the trade-off between buying peripherals and buying a different model of the Pi. Over.
Okay, George, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, thank you, Chief, for those resources regarding other Pi projects. That's really good. Gordon made a very good point about the need to have matching connectors, and also given the need for peripherals, of whether it might be cheaper to buy the $35 Pi compared to the $5 or $10 Zero Pi. And that's, I think, a matter of pricing out in advance. I believe, Gordon, you had asked about how many USB ports there are on the 3 compared to the 0 and the W. And there are 4 USB ports on the 3 I have in front of me and 1 Ethernet port. And those are regular size USB. On the Pi Zero, there's only one. So if you get the Zero, then you'll have to have a hub, a USB hub with it. Now, when would the USB hub come in as an advantage? For me, it was when I used the Pi as a media server, with the media stored on different USB memory sticks. Well, I'm up to 4 sticks and going strong, which is more. Actually, I have 7 sticks in queue, but not all mounted at the same time. And I'll be running up against the need to have more than 4 connections. So the Zero works very well for that, where an external port or USB hub is needed. In looking at the projects that I'm looking at, let's talk about cost for a second again. Let me reset. If I may, Chief, let me just very quickly give you the cost outs that I did and why I started digging into the Pi. It was a carefully thought out decision for me, both in terms of economics as well as time and effort. I had several needs or desires that I wanted to have in place here. One was a security camera. It did not have to be professional grade, just, you know, adequate to work with motion detection, and something to kind of keep an eye on the place when I have to be out of the main room here. And those can cost, you know, $200, $300, $400, $500. Raspberry Pi, let me own a wireless, let me do that for, that's a Zero W with a camera attachment. Let me do that for about $75 instead of $300 or $400. So that's a $200 savings or so right there. Another is VPN. I'm paying something like $90 a year for a VPN, and if one is willing to accept the somewhat slower response of the Pi 3, then by the investment in the Pi 3 at $35 and already having the other peripheral equipment, I can spend $35 and have a VPN for the rest of my life and not have to worry about paying the $90 for that just casual personal use. As I totaled all the different projects, and that's two of about five different needs in the shack here, with each project that I've embarked on, it has resulted in a savings of anywhere from $200 to $2,000 per project by using the Raspberry Pis at the slight expense of some speed, but since these are being used for personal use, the speed isn't so much of an issue, and I have what I needed. I have the media server, I have the surveillance camera, I have the VPN, and the other projects to boot, so it's I found it to be a very economical leverage of resources and finances. W4RFJ in the group, NO70, over.
Okay, very good, George. Well, I know you put a lot of thought and a lot of effort into it, and I have been very impressed hearing about some of the progress in your project there with the Raspberry Pi Zero. As a matter of fact, I think since the last time you and I got together, the Raspberry Pi Zero came out with a wireless version, the Raspberry Pi Zero W, and I'm pretty sure that you'll have some stuff to share with us on that. But I really need to jump in real quick and kind of change the tide here a little bit. I want to talk about some projects that you can basically plug and play. There's one that that I've been experimenting with. It's called ADSB. That's Alpha Delta Sugar Hyphen Bravo. And it's a receiver that receives not just aircraft information or aviation information, but it also has a weather receiver that can be utilized to receive live weather, along with, a sensor. There's a sensor. I have to modify the sensor because with the plug, it won't fit in the package. So I got to pull the header off and solder it directly to the header that's on the Raspberry Pi. But let me grab a nickel. All right, looking at the list, I can see there's one or two new stations. The ADSB receiver that I have, and I'm trying to remember the project name. I think it's StarX or, give me a second. I'll find it up here. I know that if you do a search on Amazon for ADSB space Raspberry Pi, you'll come up with all that neat stuff. So, it's kind of a neat thing, and it's open source, and it really does have a lot of neat features in it, especially with the sensors, the gyro and the pressure sensor. It can actually be used to drive instruments Android device or an iPad, so that's pretty cool. All right, well, let's take some more check-ins. This is W4RFJ. We've been talking about techno-babbling about microphone equalization and compression. We've been talking about parts and Raspberry Pi Zeros. Anybody out there want to join and share some of their project woes or successes and or become part of the conversation? This is W4RFJ with the July TIN Digital Techno Babble. Please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
Six Victor with a question for George when it fits.
Go for it, but make sure he keeps his answers short.
Did you hear that, George? All right, KY6V here. You know, I'm puzzled a little bit, and I'm sure that George or either one of you can straighten me out. But when you get into VPN, and George was talking about that, and having his own VPN on a Raspberry Pi, where I am confused is I've always looked at a VPN as a security-type device, and it enables you to put a cloak over yourself, if I can put it that way. You connect to the VPN. The VPN changes your IP address to something else and then sends you out to the wild, wild west. How do you do that when your VPN is your own, George? Don't you have to have another IP address or two that you have to have available, or how do you get around that problem? Back to you, Net Control, KY6V, over.
Well, it sounds to me like we need to get into a little bit of a discussion about VPNs. Go ahead, George. Fire away, Gridley, W4RFJ.
W4FJ and KY6V and N070. Did I just hear you guys ask me to explain VPNs in a short transmission? Oh, okay. Gordon, that's actually a very good question. Yes, you do have to have specified a static address and use port forwarding using the VPNs. And there are some free resources out there where you can get free names and so forth. So that's the first thing. Now, the reason for using a VPN, even on casual use and not business use, there can be a lot of reasons. And even the Society of Broadcast Engineers newsletter recently had an excellent article about the protection that a VPN offers. For example, if you are logging in, say, remotely, maybe you are out and about and want to log into your equipment shack back home, then without the VPN, people can sniff out and get your login information and then plant malware or viruses and everything because they have your login. The VPN masks all of that, so it provides protection. Also, it provides flexibility. If you want to buy some parts and you want to go check your bank account when you're using the Wi-Fi at the local coffee shop, you can use the VPN and do all of that. Without it, you're putting your bank accounts at risk. So there are some personal private advantages as well as business advantages of using the VPN. But yes, you do have to, when setting your own VPN, generate certificates and IP addresses. W4FJ, NO7F, over.
Well, I don't know, George. I think you put it quite eloquently. I guess the way I look at VPN is like it's a lead-lined pipe for digital data. So if it's lead-lined, you don't have to worry about Superman being able to see it. And literally, you're creating a point-to-point communication pipe that only you have a key with your VPN, and that stands for virtual private network. And what happens is you share a key, or you develop a key that's shared between the two ends, and they create an encrypted pipe, and this encrypted pipe can change its encryption code on a whim too, so that also adds some more security to it. So let's say, Gordon, you got a VPN set up at your house and you're out on the road and you need to check your bank account. Well, you can set up a VPN, connect to your home computer, and from there do what you need to do, and nobody would be the wiser. Gordon, did that help? W4RFJ with the TI and Techno Babble.
Yeah, well, I think George answered it also. Thank you, Raj. You know, if you're going to take this full bore, I understand the encryption, and I know where the benefits lie there. But if you're going to change your IP address, then you have to have another IP address, or a bushel basket for them, or whatever. I guess I would ask this question on the normal VPNs that you would pay money for using. You connect to them and they do all this frill work up for you. They get the encryption, they change your IP address, blah, blah, blah. Do they encrypt outbound and inbound to their server, not from you, but from whoever you're connecting to? Or is that, how do I want to put it, unsecure, off-the-shelf type stuff? In other words, is the encryption only between your equipment and the VPN, or is it encrypted elsewhere, or can it be? Over.
Well, it depends. Just so that we understand something here, most VPNs are utilized by companies and or individuals that have their own home system and their own computers that they're trying to get access to. Setting up a VPN gives you that pipe to your system or your network. If you log in through the VPN and you start browsing the internet from your home system, they'll be able to see that connection. It's usually in the clear, unless you have TOR set up or something like that, but that's a totally different subject. So my point is that the VPN pipe is usually just between you and your network. So I'll pass it over to George and see what he's got to say about it. George, when you're done, pass it back over to Gordon. Being as we got a little round table going, it's the top of the hour, and I got a couple other things I'd like to talk about, and then we'll call the net a close. Go ahead, Sheriff.
Okay. Well, the commercial of W4J and KY6V and the Southport CI and NO70, the commercial ones that I use, they're end-to-end. Once the client is activated on my desktop computer, then it encrypts there before it goes to the router and out. So it's even encrypted between the desktop and the router inside my my office here, and then it becomes it's decrypted at the web on its server, and then it's goes out from there to the destination. But I believe they also use a certificate there, so it's also encrypted from the VPN server to the website because it sets up another channel and routes it through there. So in addition, the commercial service I use has a kill switch so that if anyone does make it in and knock the VPN server offline, thereby making all of what I'm doing visible in the open, it will just shut down internet access automatically, so I don't have to worry about plugging and unplugging the Ethernet connection every night. It's automatically taken care of for me unless there's a big surprise. But then that does get into what Chief was talking about with Tor and Onion as another layer. Let me reset once again. Another advantage of the commercial VPNs is that they usually have servers in different countries, and that there also are no logs maintained of any connections, so that it, with all the recent revelations that Snowden and so forth made, it gives some added protection for for those that have a sense toward privacy that they would like to be more comfortable with. So the VPNs do provide through the servers and the lack of logging some additional protection from exploitation by the bad guys out there. W4MJ in the group, NO70.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm following 100% here, George. Thank you. I'm sitting back assuming that once it comes out of the outboard side of the VPN from your generation, you're encrypted from get-go to the VPN. If you're going into a site that's encrypted, I assume that that encryption will, it'll be handshaked into what encryption mode the site is that you're dealing with, and so it's secure in that respect. In other words, I guess put another way, you have the ability to go into an unsecure site like HTTP, or you could be still have the secure site availability by going into an HTTPS. Does that make sense in my thinking, George? Over.
Absolutely correct, Gordon. That is how it works. So you're encrypted either way, which I hear what Chief is saying. Maybe, Chief, you can clarify this. But for me, that's for my needs, that's pretty close to end-to-end encryption. What I can say is that I do check and balance bank accounts every day, log in and balance them every day. The same account is balanced every day. And I only use a VPN is always active whenever I go to any bank account, financial websites, or if I am working on a project with client confidentiality involved, make sure that the VPN is active. I just keep the VPN active all the time. It's just a lot easier, and it really does provide that amount of privacy so that, for me, it's showing due diligence for my needs. I hope that answered the question. W4FJ in the group, NO70.
Well, answered my question. And, VPN and networking with different protocols, especially with security-type stuff, can definitely be an issue. I guess nobody's really interested in talking about my ADS-B receiver, so I'll quickly give a quick description as to what that pertains to. Basically, the Raspberry Pi 3 access the computer. It has two software-defined radios plugged into USB ports. They're already pre-programmed, one for 1090 and the other one for 975. That's megahertz. And it also has a GPS receiver. And I also have the AHRS, which I can never remember what AHRS stands for, but it basically allows you to use that system, that receiver, for driving instruments such as altimeter and attitude indicator and slip indicator and all that other fancy stuff. So anyway, that's all done in software, and it's not recommended that you rely on it for navigation, but it sure does make an awesome device. I've actually played with it and watched airplanes flying around the airport here near Philadelphia. So, with that, let's talk about some ham projects. We have a lot of digital voice going on nowadays. We have D-Star, DMR, P25, Fusion. We also have the one that doesn't require a codec, which is All-Star, and, of course, Echolink. And what has started to intrigue me a little bit is HF Digital Voice. Let me grab a nickel. And, the softwares and programs involved with them are in a constant state of flux, being as they're being developed, and there's constantly a lot of change. So, anyway, I don't know if we're going to have time in this forum to really dive into some of the particulars with those, but I would like to share with everybody that I am experimenting with a couple of distributions. One that allows me to use my DB Mega board for three different modes. That's D-Star, DMR, and Fusion. So we're still experimenting on that. The board's still out on it. Some areas that I'm hoping to do some experimenting in the not-so-distant future is FL Digi. Also was thinking about, you know, Ham Radio Deluxe as being a software or program that can be used in the shack. There's still a free version of that available. All right, so that's about it. We've gone over quite a bit of stuff. This is W4RFJ with the July TIN Digital Technobabble. Do we have anybody on board that would like to check in and maybe talk about some of their projects and or some of their some bits of digital information they want to share? Please call W4RFJ with suffix only, please.
Hey, Jay.
All right. We've had a total of four check-ins. Hello, Fred. Jump on in here. What you got going on there, shipmate?
Well, not too much digital at the moment. However, I am traveling to Germany in August, and somebody on the net this morning said, well, you should take some digital along with you, which I don't have. So I'm just wondering, does anybody know what type of digital communications are popular over in Germany, and what would be useful for a traveler? Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, well, Fred, that's a very good question, one of which I can only offer tidbits of. I know DMR is very popular over in Germany. I think we had that discussion with Daryl just this past Saturday, and he made that comment, I believe. Let me pass it around to the other participants and see if they've got some feedback for you there, Fred. KY6V, this is W4RFJ with the July TIN Techno Battle. What do you say, shipmate?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Raj. And hi, Fred, KY6V. You know, the first thought that comes to mind, we have a member here on South Cars, checks in with us from time to time, that lives in Germany. He's originally from the Chicago area, and his point of residency in the United States is in Arizona, where his mother is living. But he's working and living in Germany. His call is KI7HUB, Hotel Uniform Bravo. His email is OKONQRZ. And you know what I would do, Fred, is I would just drop him a line and say, hey, I'm coming in your direction. Can you answer this, that, and the other for me? And maybe make it simple. And if you have any trouble with that, I can dig up his information here and pass it on to you. The other question, Roger, on the ADS is, how do you find the overall sensitivity, selectivity, and fidelity in one question? Over.
Well, it's all digital, Gordon. So as far as sensitivity is concerned, it's all line of sight. I was able to pick up the airplanes as they're taking off and landing at the airport, and I'm about, I guess, 5 miles away from there. So I was able to pick up some weather from time to time, but those servers, those transmitters are kind of hard to get to from the ground. If I was in an airplane with it, probably would have all kinds of neat information. So I found it to be very fascinating. Like I said, I still have some mechanical issues that I have to resolve, but I've already, you know, basically figured out what I'm going to do. And once I get that done, I'll be able to throw it on a mount out in the car and with my tablet monitor the air traffic and the weather as it's available. Did I answer your question there, Gordon?
Yes, sir. And let's see, you want to turn it back to Fred for a moment, just see if he needs any more information than I passed. Over.
You got it. Go ahead, Fred. Throw your answer back at Gordon.
Okay, thank you very much for that lead. I will seek to access the German ham over there and see if I can learn more. One of the other things that is not digital, but I just have my my regular transceiver for 2 and 70 centimeters, you know, my handheld. And I think the power supply on that that charges the batteries runs on 110 and not 220. I'm just trying to figure out a way of not having to carry along a transformer. I'm trying to put everything in a backpack, and I don't know if I'll be successful at that. So I want to travel light, but still have the equipment I need. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA. I'm sure there are other people just joined the line, so maybe they have questions also. Thank you, Roger.
Anytime, Fred. Glad to be of help. I didn't know if the Sheriff of Nottingham had any feedback for you, so I'm going to throw it to him for a quick rebuttal and see if he might have some help with that. Go ahead, George.
WB4FJ, K2HA in the group, in 70. Yes, hey, Fred, sure it's good to hear your voice tonight. I have missed hearing your voice. I need to get in there for the right to you more often. Fred, the one thought that does occur, the VPNs that we've been talking about also are well documented for their effectiveness in use overseas when visiting foreign countries. For example, if you want to make a phone call back home, if you do it voice over IP through a VPN, then you stand a good chance of saving a ton of money by doing that. Now, whether that gets in to direct conflict with some laws or if it's just that using VPN removes you from the charging, that's something you have to consult with each country for. What I can say, though, is that this whole net tonight, I've been going through a VPN server in Hungary, and what I've also found is that those audio dropouts that are plaguing Echolink, the VPN seems to protect me from those, that whatever is buffering that audio in Echolink doesn't seem to be buffering during the VPNs, which gives me some hope for reliability of calling back home when overseas. That's my comment. WB4FJ and 070 over.
Okay, very good, George. Thank you very much. This is W4RFJ with the South Cars July TIN Technical Information Network, and we're talking about digital technobabble, or even just technobabble. We have been asking for people to join us with some of their projects, maybe some information when questions come up, and if you have a project you'd like to share, or if you are looking for information, just so you know, this net is being recorded, and it will be available to be listened to. And again, I'd like to take one last time to take some check-ins here and see if there are any other topics of interest. I just want to let everybody know I've been taking some notes here, and I don't even know what the heck that was. I think something went off. I think my other tablet went off with a thunderstorm warning. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that I just lost my point, that I will be making myself available after the Saturday AM connection to answer any questions and or bring back to the Technobabble group information that they may be having issues finding. So this is W4RFJ with the TIN, Techno Babble. Anybody want to check in, please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
2GA.
I heard a 2GA, but he disappeared off my list. You still there, Gary? You were there, and then you were gone, and you're back again. W4RFJ.
The miracles of modern technology. I tapped the wrong thing on my screen. Hey, hi, how are you? And hello to everybody. I have a little project going on that maybe I could get somebody to shed some light on. This is totally new to me, and I'm on uncharted territory. So what I did was I found a DMR, a TYT MD380. Very inexpensive. It was $89. The thing's really a nice little radio. I have like zero experience and in digital mobile radio, and so I'm learning it cold, and there's not really a lot of good information out there. There's talk groups and code plugs and all this crazy stuff that I have no point of reference for. So maybe if somebody could shed a little light on that, I would be most appreciated. With that, we go back to the net. This is KC2GA.
Okay, Gary, fine business. You know, that is a good point, and I'm sorry, but I really don't have that information handy right now. Daryl up in Canada has got a lot of information on that, I know, because I'm planning on picking his brains. I have been dealing with D-Star Fusion, and those are the only two radios that I have that I can do digital with. So the DMR side, I haven't had a chance to even play with, even though the way I understand it is there is software. If you have like a DB Mega, you can actually update its firmware and utilize it with a special distribution that will detect what radio you keyed up, whether it's DMR, D-Star, or Fusion, and basically communicate on that network. It won't do it simultaneously, but it'll do one at a time. So you could have three different conversations going on if you know what I'm talking about. Let me pass it around the group real quick and see if anybody's got any feedback. Fred, your latest check-in. Do you have any feedback on the DMR question? Over.
Well, actually, I have not played with DMR. The only thing I've heard about it from people who have navigated all the menus and everything and the different groups is that the quality is really great. Just beautiful signals. Other than that, I don't know much. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Okay, Fred, thank you very much. That's some good info, and I've been hearing the same thing too. I might want to add that DMR is basically a Motorola digital format or protocol. So that's where we're getting that from, is Motorola. How about you, let's see, the Sheriff of Nottingham, do you have any feedback on the DMR situation? Well, I guess the Sheriff of Nottingham's out there arresting squirrels again. All right, we'll break with George for a moment. How about it, Captain, what do you got to say about DMR? Over.
Well, not very much. Raj, let's make sure I've got it. Okay, I stepped away from the horn again. KY6V. Hello, Gary, you rascal. Thanks for coming aboard. If you'll watch your text in a minute or two, I will put a email address for Daryl in a text box. Drop him a line, and he'll talk your ear off on that subject. His call is VO1UKZ. I'm sure you've talked with him. He's up there in the cold country, Newfoundland, etc., etc. That's the way I'd go. Or make a schedule with him. and he'll talk both of your ears off on the subject. Back to you, Roger, KY6V, over.
Yeah, I'd like to add both your ears and your neighbors. All right, Gary, yeah, and Captain, I appreciate your feedback there, yeah. Yeah, Daryl would be the guy to talk to. He's definitely into that techno babble for DMR. So wish you luck with it. I've been thinking seriously about picking up a handheld on DMR just so that I can play with it too, but really haven't had time. The wife and I are getting the goat locker ready for a trip to South Kakalaki. There's a lake down there, a state park called, Lake Greenwood State Park. And we have a campground camping spot there reserved so that we can witness the total solar eclipse, which won't happen for another 100 years. All right, Gary, back up to you there, sir. Did we answer your question or get you on the right track, or are you still as confused as you were before you came in, or even worse? If you're worse, then we've done our job.
Well, you're doing a fine job, let me tell you. Because I'm getting progressively more confused. No, actually, that's great. If Daryl is the expert, then we will go with our Canadian cousin to the north here. It's a fascinating little topic. I saw this thing for $89, and I swear this. I mean, really, $89. I said, how could you go wrong? And I'm telling you, they have two models, the MD Michael David 380 and the 390, and the only difference between the two is one has a built-in GPS, and for your $89, you get a nice little probably 2x2-inch color screen, and you get it's a very nicely made little handheld. It has some heft to it, and it is made very well. I was able to program the thing for, you know, the in analog for the local 2-meter repeater. But the digital side of thing is really very, very different. It's counterintuitive to the way you learned how to program repeaters, etc. It's just a whole different ball game. So we'll have to consult the guru here and see what's what. But good net tonight. And this is an interesting topic. Maybe we could get a TIN going on TIN, a TIN going on a TIN for DMR. we'll go with the three letter acronyms, you know, and see what we can click up. But thanks for all the help, and hope you guys are all doing fine. I'm going to sit back here and see if I can cook up anything else. KC2GA, back to the net.
KC2GA in the net. This is W4RFJ, your net control for the July TIN, and we're into a new thing we're trying out, and I'm trying to make sure that everybody that participates or checks in gets a chance to participate. And so far, just to go over some of the topics real quick that we've talked about in our techno babble this evening, we've talked about microphone equalization or compression software. Of course, you know, everybody will be able to listen to the recording once it's stopped and saved, so you'll be able to get probably more information than I'm going to give you right now. We also talked about VPNs and hardware and components and where we can get components. And but anyway, I'm getting to a point here where I'm going to have to draw this short a little bit, but I did notice we had a few more people added to the list, and I'd like to extend an invitation for them to check in. If you have not checked in and you'd like to join us here this evening, this is a digital techno babble net, the TIN for July, And we're talking about projects, questions we have concerning those projects, or if you just have general information you want to share about a project, you know, this is where we're basically just taking down a list, and, you know, we're going to try to follow up on this after the morning AM connections. I'm going to make myself available to continue this. Maybe we can do this more often, somewhat of a productive net anyway, I think. So, listen for check-ins. This is W4RFJ.
W4RFJ, here is Kilo Mike 4, Oscar, Oscar Charlie. Mike in North Dakota.
Okay, Mike, I got you. Let's see if there's anybody else. Anybody else want to join us this evening? This is W4RFJ with the July TIN.
Seven Ocean Chief, I did want to get some comments about the Raspberry Pi imaging problems on the TIN record tonight. Very briefly, that will save people hours, weeks of work. W4RFJ N070.
Oh, yeah, thanks, George. Yeah, I might get thrown in jail if I make the sheriff mad at me. We'll get right to that. Let me get Mike, Oscar, Oscar Charlie in here and see what he's got cooking, and then we'll throw it your way, George. Oscar, Oscar, KM400C from W4RFJ, good evening and welcome to the July TIN. What kind of projects you working on?
Well, if the wind had ever stopped blowing, I'm working on getting my tower up. Got my slab poured and plates ready and got my tilt-over mechanism being machined as we speak at my buddy's house. So one step at a time, and I think I'm probably going to do a beam with a vertical on top of that. For 2 meters, and then I'll worry about the other bands a little later. I just need to be able to work a few of the repeaters that a little bit off in the distance. I can hit them just the way I am now when the weather's cooperating, but I'm going to get things up a little further in the air there where I'll have less problems. 80 degrees on the prairie here today. The sun's still shining. The wind, of course, is blowing, and we haven't had any rain in weeks. Terrible drought here. Nice to hear everybody. I hope everybody's having a great week. Hello to my friend Gordon there, back in my old stomping grounds. I'll send it back to Net Control from KM400C.
Okay, Mike, fine business. Well, best of luck with the tower. My definition of a good antenna system is more towers. The more towers, the better. Let's see here. Now, George has got a question about, or he's got some information he wants to share, one of the two, about imaging with the Raspberry Pi. So I'm going to pass it over to the Sheriff of Nottingham before he sends out a warrant for my arrest. Go ahead there, George.
W4FJ and the TIN NO70. Well, thank you, Chief. All right, I'll make this as short as possible, but there is a little bit of history with this. First, thank you for your visit back before the Pi Zero Wireless came out. Back then, it was pretty simple regard formatting this SIM card. Now, Ned, what happens with the Raspberry Pi is that it boots off of a SIM card instead of off of a hard drive. That means you have to have the operating system installed on the SIM card. The problem with that is that, that a lot of the videos that are online and other how-tos do not address when that process fails that everyone says works. There have been several recent developments where, for example, Windows 10 will not format the SIM card to allow the boot image to be put onto the SIM card. So you have to do workarounds for that. Secondly, the Pi Zero Wireless was introduced in March after Chief's visit here. And I won't tell you how many hours I spent trying to figure all this out, but they put out a bad image on the website. Just to give you an idea of how touchy this problem has been, the image that was owned there when she came by to visit had been out there for about a year. They've now had four different boot images between January and July up on the website. Let me reset. So the question becomes, with that moving target, how do you reliably get up and running without a lot of frustration and wasted time? Let me try to save you some effort. If you're doing a Pi Zero, not wireless, then you can use the images from just about any one of those times. However, the most recent releases are from July or May. Now, if you're going to be using the Zero wireless, they will all tell you to use the Raspbian image. Do not believe it. You have to use the Nudes image, which is available for download from the RaspberryPi.org website, and then choose the Raspbian operating system to be installed. That is the only way that the wireless so far will work, and even then you have to copy all of the files from the subfolders that were unzipped up to the main folder on the SIM card before it will boot up the Zero wireless. Let me reset again. And finally, when you want to introduce the Pi 3 or the more expensive cards, you're a little bit better off, but again, you're faced with the problem of, can a Windows 10 machine with your SD card writer give you a format and put the image on the SIM card? Now, the workarounds, probably not. The workarounds for that are twofold. Number one, you can use the Linux DD command, which does the formatting and copying the image. The problem is that that doesn't always work either. The good news, and here's the bottom line of it, you can actually now, after some of the updates to the image they have done since January, do an SD card copy from the pull-down menu on the Raspberry Pi Home GUI screen. So you do not want to download Lite, you want to download the whole thing. And then you can copy a working SD card to another SD card plugged into your Linux port, USB port, with the SD card reader, and get a working image that way, and that will save you weeks and hours of frustration and pain and agony. So bottom line of it is, get one working SD card. Maybe you want to buy one working SD card and use it, and then use the GUI SD card copy, but make sure that you are getting the Nudes version for the Pi Zero wireless, and then you have more flexibility for the Pi Zero and for the 3 and above, where you probably want to go for the Jesse, but not the Jesse Lite, the Jesse, or the other images like for Kodi or other special purpose images, just like you might have a special purpose computer with a special boot for each purpose that you want to use it, the desktop for. Okay, that's going to be very confusing being such a high-level thing, but it may save some people a lot of time and aggravation with trying to get a Raspberry Pi SIM card working. Thanks for the chance to discuss this, Chief. Back over to you, W4FJ, NO70, over.
Okay, well, with that, let's go to the group and see if we have any questions or concerns with what the Sheriff of Nottingham has shared. If you have, please call W4RFJ, suffix only, please.
2GA, quick comment.
Go ahead, 2GA.
Hey, thank you, sir. I was out of the room, so I did hear the imaging a little bit, and I have had that experience with my Raspberry Pi. So that was good. That was good. Good to hear that. I did want to just pass along one quick comment. I know you guys were talking earlier about microphones and compression and all that, and that's a subject for a completely independent pin, but I did want to pass along my recommendation. If you want to upgrade your microphone, I just recently got an MXL BCD1, and I will tell you right now, you cannot do any better than that. It is just phenomenal, the difference that made. It's a relatively inexpensive upgrade for your station. It's about $150. It is the closest thing you're going to hear on amateur radio to an Electro Voice RE20. It is a phenomenal sounding mic, and I give it 2 enthusiastic thumbs up. That's all I got. Back to the net, KC2GA.
Okay, Gary, fine business. And I think that just so you know, most of the conversation about microphones was dealing with software. Most of the software, as the captain put it, deals with the output. It doesn't deal with just the microphone or the input. It just deals with the output. So Gordon's got some software he's going to be playing with, and I'm sure that he'd be glad to share that. So let's see, getting back to the imaging thing. Again, Gary, thanks a lot for being there. I guess George has kind of taken on this project, these plural projects, and he does throw a lot of kudos my way for going down there and visiting and helping out. But really, it was my pleasure, my honor to be able to go down and get to know him. So. But my hat's off to him. He's done a lot with those Raspberry Pi Zeros, and we keep encouraging to dig and share. Dig and share. So, all right, let's see here. It's getting late, guys, and we've gone about 45 minutes longer than I expected, but that's okay. I have to get up super early in the morning. Unless somebody wants to pick this up and carry on with it, I got to be up at 4:30, and it's 8:45 now. I'm not going to be in very good shape. So we'll take another round of check-ins. We'll call this the last call, if you guys don't mind. Unless somebody, George, if you want to pick it up, you can do that too, or if Captain or somebody else wants to pick up and carry on. Literally what we're trying to do here is find a forum where we can share in all the technobabble that we deal with in our projects. And what brought that up really in my mind's eye was some of these projects that George has been working on. Let me grab a nickel. I don't need to be getting that Purple Crystal Award to make George down south mad at me because he gets all those. Anyway, long story short story longer, I just felt that, the TIN, being an information type of network, you know, maybe we could come up with a technobabble version that allowed us to share in some of our projects and or ask questions. Maybe somebody knows something that that he learned from doing the same thing, and it just brings a commonality together for sharing in technology and helping each other out. So, you know, there's resources, there's books, there's websites, there's all kinds of neat stuff out there, all of which I do not have enough time in the day to research personally, so if we can get everybody involved, that would be a great thing. Anyway, I noticed there was a few new call signs. I'd like to make sure everybody's had a chance to check in, if anything, just to say hello. This is W4RFJ with the Digital Techno Babble, and if you want to know what we talked about, you're just going to have to wait for the recording. So last call for check-ins, W4RFJ, suffix only, please. Okay, wait a minute. Do I got to read the preamble to close? I guess I do. I better get it up on the computer here. Let's see. Captain, any final comments over?
No, I don't think so, but thanks for everything, Roger. You don't need to read the closing preamble. Just say goodnight to everybody, and leave the building. Over.
Okay. Well, we'll do that as soon as everybody's had a chance to say say adios. George, the Sheriff of Nottingham, how about you? Any closing comments?
I just want to know when Chief Elmer W4FJ Elvis has left the building in S70.
All righty then. Okay, let's see. Fred, any closing comments there, sir?
Well, thank you, Roger. Appreciate you doing this. And get some good sleep. And maybe soon we'll be able to get together and do an eyeball. This is Fred, K2HA.
You know what, Fred? I would really enjoy that. And I've just been super busy with getting the goat locker ready for this coming up next month. The total solar eclipse is happening, and we got ourselves a reserved camping spot down at Lake Greenwood, South Kakalaki, and we want to be there to witness that. So the camper is in the shop right now, getting a lot more work than I expected to done on it. They found a cracked dome over the shower. The front caliper on the passenger side froze up. And we're getting a new TV antenna put on and the roof sealed. So and inspected and all that other happy stuff. So anyway, I'll tell you another story. Remind me to tell you another story. You'll probably have to wait until the Saturday or Sunday rag tube. But it's about the new Liberty that we just bought to be able to flat tow behind the camper. So remind me of that, and I'll tell you a little story that you might get a chuckle out of. Okay, let's see. Two Golf Alpha. Gary, any closing comments? Please call W4RFJ with the TIN.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Elvis left the building a long time ago. Great net. It was a real pleasure to listen to it and be part of it. 7-3 to everybody. Back to that, KC2GA.
Okay, well, that's all I've got, everybody, and certainly do appreciate you guys and gals stopping by, and I want to extend a special thank you to Miss Sunshine down there in sunny Florida for reading the preamble for us and introducing me. And I'm hoping that we can do some more nets like this. To me, it's a lot more fun if everybody gets a chance to participate and share and ask questions, and that's what I was hoping to do. So I don't know if I've accomplished that, but I'll pass it over to Captain and bid everybody a special adieu. I do need to get out of here and get myself ready for bed. So 73 all around. Again, thank you very much for joining us. Captain, take her away, and I appreciate you being there too, sir.
Well, muchas gracias, senor. Hasta la bye-bye here from South Florida. Thanks for everything, Rog. Good evening to everybody. KY6V, and we're going to dump the recordings.